WPFW Washington.
Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Street, Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica, here live at Ben's Next Door. All right, let's hear it.
Yeah. Come join us.
Okay, come join us, 12th and U Street. We're here for the next hour solving the world's problems. I am, of course, Terry D. Kester with my colleagues.
Garland Nixon.
He's quick on the uptake, isn't he?
I had to think about that for a while.
I was about to say Mark
I'm sorry
Levine.
To confuse you. I'm sorry to confuse you.
He doesn't know who he is.
This is Mark Levine.
And Mark Levine, yes. And we have a guest host tonight, too. We're privileged to have a guest host. And it is Ron Moorfield. And Ron Moorfield is one of the supporters of the Raucous Caucus and WPFW. And because of that great support, he is joining us on the show tonight as a co-host. Not only that, it's his topic. You know, and we're forced to deal with his topic, which is okay, because I think we're mostly in kind of agreement.
It's a very good topic.
And in fact, Ron and I have already decided, Mark and Garland, that he and I are in total agreement, so you guys can go home.
Ron saying that, Terry. I think that's just your idea.
No, we did agree.
See, there you go.
Well, too bad, Ron. too bad.
This man is a genius.
We come with the deal. We come with the deal. Why don't you describe that topic?
Terry, when do I get my dollar?
Soon as Mark loses his bet. Okay, let me give you a little information about Ron, a very interesting man here. He's worked with major in consulting and technology firms doing software development and project management. He is the owner and CEO of Harmony Natural Healing Spa in Atlanta, Georgia, with herbs, supplements, massage, chiropractic, I need a massage, thank you, and facials. That's in reference to his wife, who's Mahalia, am I saying that correct? Mahalia, yeah. Who is here? Never mind. Anyway, he is also a certified acupuncturist. He's authored 2 books on Oriental medicine, and he's worked in the mental health field for years as own software developed business. And for more information, you can check on www.ronmoorfield.com.
Terry, why don't you announce the topic tonight so people know that it's not about acupuncture, because it's not.
It's not?
You mean it's not about acupuncture?
What? No.
I'm out of here then.
Yeah, what are these notes for? Anyway, there's 2 topics tonight. First off, we're going to talk for a little bit, because actually, believe it or not, in my mind, and I think in Ron's mind too, and we'll see him with Garland and Nixon, these things are all Garland and Nixon. I love that.
Yeah, I like that too. Garland and Nixon.
These ideas are actually connected in many ways. The first thing we're going to discuss a little bit is, maybe for the first 10 minutes or so, is the Penn State situation and the Aurora, Colorado situation there. Situation being a very weak word, obviously.
I don't know that we could do both of those in 10 minutes.
Well, we'll try. But then we get on to the primary topic, which is, you'll love this, progressives are not the solution. Progressives are the problem. Mm. Way to go, Ron.
It sounds like Mark and I got, we're stirring over here on the far, the far outskirts of this program,
yeah,
buddy.
It's going to be an interesting show, as it always is, on WPFW and the Raucous Caucus. To begin with, I'll just state myself very clearly, my reason for introducing a little bit about Penn State and a little bit about Aurora, Colorado. One, I used to live in Denver, Colorado, part of, right next to Aurora. Two, I graduated from Penn State. I'm now almost ashamed to say, but that was many, many years ago. Many, many, many years ago. I don't think they even had a football team when I was there, but, you know, it was ways back.
That was at Valley Forge, I think?
At Valley Forge, yes. Penn
they
State.
Had a, actually, I think they had a dinosaur racing team.
They did.
The pterodactyls
won. It was good. And I was
because
there.
They could fly.
I think they were playing rugby with the British soldiers in the French and Indian War, something like that.
If only. Anyway, it seems to me that what Aurora, Slaughter, and Penn State football scandal and Mr. Sandusky's rape of young men, and there's no more gentle words to use, young boys.
Children.
Yes, thank you, children. They really reflect more than anything else the culture in the United States, and that saddens me to say that. But it reflects the culture in the sense that, one, we are taught and believe that simply we can do whatever the hell we want to do as individuals. We worship the individual. If you want to molest a child, molest a child. If you want to shoot people, shoot people. And the other part of our culture that seems to dominate our culture is, frankly, violence. If I want to be violent to you or be shoot you, I have the right to do that. It doesn't matter. I can make up a reason, self-defense, hello, Mr. Zimmerman, or whatever, but it is our culture that I have the right to be violent to you. Let's go straight to Ron and get your perspective on these two things, and do they connect?
Oh, absolutely. We worship violence. And, you know, I mean, just look at all the violent movies, all the violent television, World Wrestling, Universal
UFC.
Fight Club. Yeah, all of that stuff. And on top of it, the whole capitalistic system is based on violence, in a sense.
Thank you.
Explain
a little bit more, Ron. Just let me.
Well, the idea is that you get ahead by screwing other people, basically.
What? That describes it. Hello, Mitt Romney. I didn't know you were going to be with us tonight. Okay, and Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, let me tell you what I think the two of them have in common. And by the way, I'm going to be dealing with both these topics tomorrow. For those who want to listen in, they go to marklevinetalk.com. It's also radio stations across the country, but just 7 to 10 p.m. So we got 3 hours. People can call in and disagree with me.
WPFW.
Here's what I think they have in common. It's not – both of them feature a lone, horrible individual. Both of them feature things that are illegal in terms of murdering people or molesting children. But both of them feature something much larger. And that is a conspiracy of silence. Both of them feature many, many more people than the crazy, evil individual. In Penn State, there were a lot of people that knew about it, but protected for the sake of football. In the case in Colorado, there are a lot of people that support gun laws that allow a crazy man to buy an assault rifle with a 100 magazine clip. And so, to me, what's most interesting about both scandals, and what I'm going to address a lot tomorrow, is not the Jerry Sandusky or James Holmes of the world. It's very easy just to say they're evil and crazy. That's easy. To me, what's more interesting is all the people who didn't commit the crimes, but in some way, I think, are complicit in them.
That's a really good point.
And in my mind, the people at Penn State didn't commit a crime because it's not a crime not to report a crime, but they are morally culpable. And the people who support those gun laws didn't commit a crime because it's not a crime.
But they're morally culpable.
But they're also
morally
culpable.
They are
morally
culpable.
So to me, that's how I combine the two together.
Okay, Garland?
Well, I take it a little bit of a different perspective because I see them as very, very different. I see very different things. But regarding the Aurora incident, here's what I think. In America, there are certain decisions that we have to – that we make as a country, as a society, as a culture. And that is – in order to have this, we're willing to put up with that. Such as, in order to have the death penalty, which we have, we're willing to put up with the reality that we're going to execute some innocent people every now and then. That's what our country does. That's what it is. That's what we know, we're going to execute some innocent people. Okay. There are people who say we've got to have complete and total gun freedom. I was on a TV one day with a guy who said he thinks that every single person should be able to carry a concealed weapon for any reason at all time, be they gang member or whatever. What we're saying with guns as a society is we're willing to put up with the occasional massacre and slaughter of innocent people in order to have the freedom to carry guns wherever we want, or to have the gun freedom that we have. I think that's what our society culture overall is saying, and that is a pretty sad statement.
I actually compared that to Penn State in the sense that I think there are people that say, in order to get really good football, we're willing to put up with a molestation or
something. Penn State wasn't about football.
I think it was.
What do you mean?
Let me tell you what it was about. I don't think it would have been covered up if it had been the engineering program.
Let me tell you something.
Let me tell you something, Mark.
Mark, hang down.
The engineering program brought in $70 million a year, like football, they would have covered up the engineering program.
That's the point. It had nothing to do with football.
But that's my point.
That is the point.
Football and the money that football brings.
So football was ancillary to it. The $70 million.
I accept that.
So people looked at it and they said, you know, if we turn this guy in, next thing you know, ESPN, the kids aren't coming. We don't make our $70 million.
No, I accept that.
It could have been the badminton team.
But even the NCAA said that same thing. And, you know, which is probably the first time anybody in the NCAA has ever said anything about that. That the whole program of football corrupted the whole thing. Football was the product, and it is the product.
Football and the money attended
to it.
It's a product. That's all it is. And if you get money for the product, you're going to protect it. That's what the Lockheed Martin does. Come on, there's no difference.
Yep.
It's like Ron said in the very beginning. That's the nature of capitalism.
Universities
today are run basically on a capitalistic premise. Yep. And that's really the tragedy. There's a whole lot of tragedies involved in this, and it is our culture that does it. Somebody wrote an excellent column. It's not the question of why, and I wish I remembered who it was. But it's not a question of why do bad things happen to good people, but rather why do good people let bad things continue? And that really is the question.
Let's give Ron a chance to comment one more time if you want to.
Yeah, sure, Ron. Jump in one more.
On what we've said so far.
Oh, no, I just agree with that. It's about the money. The money is at the root of it.
He agrees. I told you he was a genius. We've got a genius in. There's no question about it.
Yeah. And it's the same thing for Aurora. I mean, you know, ultimately, the NRA comes down to the money they make through the gun sales.
And NRA gets a lot of money. You know, you start looking at Remington and all these other companies that make a lot of money, Beretta, that make a lot of money off guns, and they're contributing to the lobby, and it always comes back to money.
And the NRA gives a lot of money to every single politician, and not even President Obama will denounce the gun laws that exist today.
That's true, Terry, but I don't think it's about money. I was upset that President Obama didn't denounce the guns, but I understand why.
Because he's getting money.
No, because Virginia and Ohio and a lot of states, for money, but for votes. There's no connection
between money and votes.
There is, but not in this case.
In this case, I think he recognized a lot of rural white voters that are middle class or working class and might otherwise vote for President Obama, 2-4% might turn against him if he came out strongly against him.
Wait a minute. Do you really think it's the lower middle class, the white middle class that's got all the guns? Are you kidding?
In rural America.
Rural America?
America has a lot of guns.
Are you kidding?
Really?
Oh,
you think it's all in the cities?
Good heavens.
Mark was talking about the votes. Mark was talking about who has the guns.
You're talking about speaking out against gun control.
I don't think that the drug dealers are the ones that are the votes that he cares about.
Do you think the drug dealers have all the guns?
Who do you think has all the guns?
The American citizen, the average American citizen of all levels. Everybody, darn, I even hate to admit it, but half the members of my family are gun collectors. You know, and they've got guns.
Do they live in rural areas?
No, they're successful, professional, educated people with master's degrees, PhDs, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think most of those people own guns. Maybe it's just not the culture. Doesn't this come back to what I said?
It comes back to culture. It comes back to our society. It comes back to the point that not just President Obama, but a lot of Democrats right now are keeping their powder dry regarding this issue.
You picked a terrible metaphor.
Because they know there are people that may be scared away from voting them. And that means that our society as a whole is saying we're willing to deal with an occasional slaughter
Here's a lesson that Congressman Barney Frank taught me when I worked for him. It's a very important lesson in politics. He said it doesn't just matter where the majority is, but how strongly the minority feels.
Good point. You
look at a case of gun control, you will find 65-70% of Americans support gun registration, are against assault rifles, are against large magazines, are against cop killer bullets, 70-30. But the 30% that want all those things wants them really badly, and they become one-issue voters, whereas the other 70% might vote among a series of things. So in this case, the minority, by caring so strongly, actually controls over the majority.
And that actually segues right in to much of what Ron Moorfield, our guest host tonight with his guest topic, that segues right into a lot of what he has brought to the table today in terms of discussion. Let's begin at the beginning, though, of your premises, Ron, because it's all worthy of discussion. And one thing that struck out at the very beginning, besides the title, progressives are not the solution, they are the problem, but your number one point that struck me here is the American dream and democracy are not in danger. I submit they are already lost. And that's because, as progressive, we passively stood by and let it happen. Even though the progressives are a minority, that ties into what Mark was saying. Ron?
Yeah, this was a perfect segue because what's going to happen with...
I tend to do perfect segue whenever I can.
Yeah. Can I speak into the microphone?
The thing in Aurora, I mean, what's going to happen, we all know. For a week, maybe 2 weeks, people are going to talk about it and say how horrible it all was, and then it'll end. Nobody will actually do anything about it. And issue after issue after issue is just like that. People talk and talk and talk and talk, and they talk about different things because everybody's got a different topic they want to talk about, and they don't rally around one thing. You know, like Norman Schwarzkopf said, the reason we won so fast in the first Iraq war is because everything could be said in five words. Get Iraq out of Kuwait.
And the reason Clinton won back in the 90s was of one simple phrase. It's the economy stupid.
So like as progressives, what we've really got to do is we've got to start rallying around a very common topic and start acting.
So what's your five-word phrase? Got one?
Yeah. He does.
Let me hear it.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Greed is the root of all evil. Republicans are all about greed.
Pretty strong.
You know,
let me just throw one more idea here, and then let me get Garland and Mark, because this ties into what he was just saying there, and it fits with the first comment as well. And I'm quoting from Ron's work here. So this is some notes and information that he gave us very thoughtfully prior to the show so we could do our homework. We tend to take the Bill Maher approach by making the judgment that right-wing conservatives are nutcases that live in a bubble of delusional facts created by Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, and the right-wing spin machine. While that may be true, we think that making that judgment alone and ridiculing the true believers is enough to produce meaningful changes, but it doesn't. And we have to admit, on the Raucous Caucus, we often ridicule these right-wingers, and it, as Ron is pointing out, doesn't accomplish anything.
No, actually, Mark Garland? And I, we ridicule you, Terry.
Well, there is that, too.
Occasionally we ridicule the right wing.
And we think it accomplishes something.
Yeah.
It hasn't so far.
It gives me a lot of joy.
You know, it warms our heart.
You
know,
as long as you have joy, that's
fine. Hey, that's part of life is now. You know what? Are you denying that the pursuit of happiness, my pursuit of happiness, that is guaranteed the Declaration of Independence?
I'm going to deny it.
And I enjoy it by mocking you.
I'm all for it.
And I'm going to deny it unless you have the same size gun I do.
Well, there we go. I would say this. Whoa. You know, it's interesting. When you say progressives aren't the problem, they aren't the solution, they're the problem. I would agree with that in this way. They're both the problem. They can be both the problem and the solution. And for instance, if a person has an issue, whether it's, you know, they're a heroin addict, they are the problem, but once they realize that there's a problem in what they're doing, they're the only person that can solve that problem. So if you make the argument that progressives are the problem because they've acquiesced and they've been, you know, they've to the far right and they've just kind of sat on their laurels and, you know, watched things happen, then that also means that in the event that they rally and then get themselves together and start fighting, that they can be the solution. So I will give you that. The former, as long as it goes with the ladder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what we do is we start the progressive 12-step program.
Now this is good. Yes.
The first thing yep. is recognizing where you are causing the problem.
We did do an intervention with President Obama.
We did.
That's it.
And he's still smoking. I don't know why.
Obviously, we have to do an intervention with the entire American public. Go ahead, Ron. I'm sorry.
That's what we got to do.
Huh?
That's what we got to do. Exactly. Okay. And we've got to get progressives to start.
The next Raucous Caucus will be a 12-step meeting. Okay? That's a plan. We plan to be here. But let me give you one other point that Ron throws in here because he's got a lot of good ones. Whatever judgments we make when measured by results, the right-wing strategy has clearly worked, while fundamentally the progressive strategy, or lack thereof, doesn't. We fail to take meaningful action because we labor under the delusion, or illusion, he says, but delusion is probably the better word. We labor under the delusion that intellectualizing and talking about issues actually accomplishes anything. It doesn't.
I'm going to defend progressives here a little bit because I think that one of the things that Ron's thoughtful essay does not take into account.
Manifesto, whatever it may be, he hasn't gotten to the part about Che Guevara yet.
The power of the media as it exists and its willingness to air progressive voices. As someone who has been on progressive media, has been on right-wing conservative media, I've been on foreign media, I've been everyone in between, I would argue that the right progressive message can go not just for the brain, but for the heart and the soul. I do remember one particular Christmas time on Fox, I might as well mention the network, where I had five hosts arguing about rich tax cuts, and I said to all of them, basically what you're saying is Ebenezer Scrooge needs more gold, Tiny Tim, lose your crutches. And they got very offended, and we ended up spending the next 15 minutes arguing about whether or not my metaphor was apt, and I just laughed and called them all Scrooge, and I think I won that debate. So I agree with you that progressives shouldn't all be brain, they should also be heart and soul. But I would argue that given the media as it exists, it's hard to get those progressive voices in, and they haven't invited me back on that show for a while.
The bigger point that Ron's trying to make, and we've discussed it on this show many times, that you cannot defeat these right-wing or anybody's personal views with facts or information or disgust. It does not work.
I think you could use facts and emotion. I don't want to use emotion to the absence of facts because that's what they do. I think we can do both.
Yeah, it doesn't accomplish anything.
I don't think you can argue with them because
they're not
interested in arguing on a debate.
I'm not trying to persuade them, though. When I'm on TV, if I'm arguing
with the
right winger,
I'm trying
to persuade the people on the other side of that screen.
If I'm
with Bill O'Reilly, I'm not trying to persuade Bill O'Reilly.
But you know what this is? This is, you know, we do it on WPFW, too. I mean, we can't deny it. We can't be in that kind of denial. We preach to the choir.
Sure.
And so does
the right wing. Both sides preach to the choir.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why I go on right wing stations.
The point is, nothing is changing.
We're preaching,
they're preaching, they've got a better preaching machine than we do.
Much better.
I would argue that they don't. Here's what I would
argue. They don't?
That they don't have a better preaching machine, that it's deeper than that. We're talking about, I hate to go back to this word again, cultural dynamics. The right wing, worldwide, anywhere in the world, is by its very nature somewhat authoritarian. And they tend to all march together and all get together. And one thing they think it's very, very important for everybody to think, act, and do the same thing.
That's the nature of the right wing mindset.
Okay. And that in itself is very powerful and effective.
You bet.
Now let's get over to the other side of the brain where the fact is you can't herd cats. Now what I think we need to do on the progressive side rather than try to imitate, you know, it's like a good coach. A good coach doesn't try to change his players. He tries to take the players that he has and gets the most out of those players. What the left needs to do
is stop trying to
bring everyone together with this one authoritarian message and to combat the right wing, but it's to look at the strengths of what we do and how we do it and utilize our strength and stop saying, how are we going to message like them? How are we going to do this? Forget them. Do what we do best. And that's what we don't do. And one of the things we don't do very well is to all come together and think alike.
Yeah. So what are those strengths?
Yes, go ahead.
I was going to ask, what are those strengths then?
Beat the heck out of me. I've been trying to figure them out for 4 years.
What, progressive strength?
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you progressive strength.
That was a joke.
Let me give some progressive strengths. I think that progressive strengths go, frankly, the same institutions that conservatives claim all the time are our institutions. Let me start with the Bible. Okay? There are a lot of things in the Bible I don't like, but the vast majority of it I do. It's all about caring for your fellow man. The first question asked is, am I my brother's keeper? God answers emphatically yes. It's all about taking care of the poor. Frankly, there's a lot more socialism in the Bible than anywhere in the United States politics. And the other one that I would argue, and I carry around with me all the time just for that reason, is the Constitution of the United States.
Now, how does this tie with progressions? I'm missing something here.
We need to reclaim the progressive values that already exist in institutions we have that even conservatives respect. Our idea that we should look out for each other and that we're all in a community and, you know, can't we all get along? I mean, these to me are human values that progressives recognize the vast majority of humanity shares.
Terry, I will now give you our greatest strength.
Yes, we've been waiting
for
this.
This is our greatest strength.
Here we go.
Poll after poll shows this. More people agree with us
right.
than agree with the right wing.
There you go.
That's
you know,
the but then, polls show. Well, let me finish. Yeah. So the strength is, for instance, the ACA, the health, Obamacare, as they call it.
Yeah.
When you take it apart and you ask all the Americans, do you agree with this, like 65% of the people agree with it. So what we have in our favor is that we have the policies that are most amenable to the largest number of people. Now, what we have to do is figure out how to use
That's the problem. That's the real problem, and that's what Ron has been addressing in his manifesto today, and we're going to continue discussing in the second half of the show. I don't think anybody here, at least in this audience, in this crowd, and these listeners, would disagree
here
with you.
Here at Ben's Next Door,
1211 U Street,
right next to Ben's Chili Bowl.
That would disagree with you that the progressives do have the better social message, and the majority of people do agree with it. But
I would disagree with you, Terry.
Somehow or other, Garland, that message is not conveyed and not empowered. And that's the real question. How is it that if we have a message that people agree with to a greater degree, that we don't have any power, that we don't have mobilization, that we don't have action, that we don't have power? That's what we've got to figure out.
Great point.
And we're going to figure that out in the second half of the show of the Raucous Caucus. I am Terry D. Kester with Mark Garland Nixon, Mark Levine. And Ron Moorfield. We'll be back in just a moment.
I know, we're still here. No, but guys, no, we're not going anywhere.
Terry just couldn't wait to get rid of us.
They just brought his drink, and he was, you know, trying to shut things down.
Oh, please, they haven't brought me a drink here, and I don't know how long. That's not true. Damone is a dump. Sorry, I'm not picking on you.
Well, those four that you had before the show to kind of get yourself together, you know.
Yeah, we've got to keep track of this, though. So, gentlemen, I'm going to ask the big question on WPFW. How much time do we have?
We got a couple minutes.
Well, as I see it, Terry, I think we got about 10.5.
Anyway,
we got about 10.5 billion years before the sun goes supernova.
That the Raucous Caucus illustrates really well, which is that one of the things about progressives is they're never unified. And all you have to do is look at Garland, Terry, and me every single week to recognize
that we can't even agree on the time.
You know, our hearts may be in the same place, but our minds definitely are not.
Definitely
and we all have different ways of combating the same problem.
Let me.
I would argue that what progressives need to do is not the way Garland said the right wing does it, not we have a single message, we are robots. Because we're not going to do that. We're progressives. But at least come around certain basic principles we can agree on, right? We can say, we can disagree on whether the Affordable Care Act is good or not, but we can all agree that we should march eventually towards universal health care. We can all agree the environment needs help. We can all agree that we have an obligation to look out for our fellow man. And I would like to draw the broad agreements that, frankly, Terry, you, Colin, and I share, rather than some of the picayune disagreements.
But what you described, you know, Mark, is the worst marketing campaign I've ever heard in my entire life.
This isn't for everyone. This is for the progressives.
Yeah, this is internal, Terry.
This is intra-marketing.
This is an internal. Now we have to wrap it up. Okay. This is the Raucous Caucus. We'll be back in 1 minute. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Andy Shalal, owner of Busboys and Poets in Edenville Restaurant and chairman of the Circle of Excellence in Radio. Perhaps you're interested in playing a larger role in support of WPFW. The Circle of Excellence is a group of listeners who contribute $1,000 or more a year to support the station's programming. Circle of Excellence members are making an investment in public radio that so many in our community rely on. They want to make sure it'll be here today and tomorrow and for all who listen, even those who can't afford to make a contribution right now. If you would like to increase your support to WPFW and join the Circle of Excellence, please call 202-588-0999, extension 344, or visit us today online at WPFW.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Raucous Caucus down here at Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Street. And let's hear it for the Raucous Caucus, if we don't mind here. Trying to keep this audience awake. Yeah. And we're down here at Ben's Next Door, and you can still get down here and join the show. And, of course, throughout the show, we do have open mic, and so we will allow you to get in with your questions and comments if you come down and join us. I am Terry D. Kester, and to my right is...
To your left, actually, would be Garland.
Oh, you're not even close
to
my left.
Right.
No. You're to my right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, right. And to my other right...
is Mark Levine.
And our guest host tonight, Ron Moorfield, is with us.
Whoa! And...
Stay calm, Garland. And we're you should be down here at Ben's to see what
we're doing.
Keep moving. There's nothing to see here. Keep moving. There's nothing to see here.
Too much fun.
It's so much better. If we were on TV, we'd just take over the networks. You know, there's no question about it. Murdoch.
Or get thrown off probably after the first show.
Probably.
During our short break here, Mahalia Moorfield, Ron's extraordinary wife,
yes,
came up to us and made a very passionate point regarding what we're generally talking about. And
which is what progressives can do or should do.
What should do or what our focus should be, or just clarifying the issue. And since she's right here and since she obviously has so much wisdom, we'd like to ask her to share that with all of you. Come on up here, please. Take the mic.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and thank you, everyone, for listening. I have to let you know that we have got caught in a cycle of taking. There is a black hole there that continues to take. It can't stop. Its nature is to take. It's the way it does. And that's what government is supposed to be in there, to put a block on that, because taking never stops. People create a thing. They make a thing. It's a beautiful house. It's done. Oh, I love it. People give a service. They have someone who's finished, and they're, oh, I'm so happy. My hair is terrific. But takers can't stop. There is no end. That's why we have to do something.
Wow. There you have it.
Great.
The problem of the taker.
Her point is that it's we may point our fingers at ourselves a lot and say, well, we're not being effective. And that's all true. I don't, she's not disputing that. But we have to recognize what we're up against.
Yep.
That not everyone is of goodwill. It's not that.
That's not what she's saying.
I think having
spoken to her before about this, you know, she's talking about we are all caught in this culture of taking, period. You are, Mark. I am. Garland is. We are all. Ron is. We are all caught in this culture of taking. If you again read, and Garland introduced me to it, the story of B.
Oh, man, that's great.
Boy, that
great
will change meeting. The way Ron knows that. Okay,
the
good.
Story
that
of
will
B,
change your
awesome.
Thinking, and you understand exactly what Mahalia was just talking about. We're caught in this, not just consumerism, but taking, taking, taking. And capitalism feeds on it. Marketing feeds on it. And it is fact probably that more than anything else. And I meant to mention this at the top of the show, because this very taking mania that we are caught in is what contrapuntally creates incredible anxiety.
Did you just say contrapuntally?
I did. I
and you did so in public.
I learned that on Penn State.
A whole bunch of people.
Thank you. Yes. Contrapuntally.
Yeah, I think that should be the first and last time we use that word.
Leave out the contrapuntally.
The effect of talk taking like this creates anxiety, depression, et cetera, which then attacks the individual, heightening their level of anxiety until finally a lot of them, unfortunately, go berserk, deciding to get guns and start shooting people. Because we make people feel inadequate because they can't take fast enough.
At least all this taking isn't affecting the climate, because then we'd really be screwed.
Oh, no, of course not. Of course not. Yeah.
I don't know that that was the Batman killer's motivation, but I get your point. That we are in a culture where The more you have, the more you're worth.
Well, and also, we have gone from
that's a key point.
A culture of making things and new things and better things to where now it's easy to make money by taking things from other people. So you take their houses and you take their bank accounts and you take their company.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, and let
that's
me say
what Bain
that,
does regularly.
I was about to say, and when you go to the far right, like we're saying Bain Capital, when you go to the far right, to the right wing is all about taking. And in fact, taking is considered something that's positive. If you come in and you take jobs and you take, but you get something for yourself. They say, that's right, he made $1 million.
And what is that? What is that?
It costs lives, jobs, and everything, and we can applaud a person who takes, and lays waste and leaves blackened rubble in his path. But look what he did. That's great. We
What is it? Destructive capitalism or construct? What is that phrase?
Vulture capitalism.
Vulture capitalism. That's Mitt Romney.
That's the
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney's the phrase.
Yeah, but we really are caught in this. There's no question about that.
And see, we have to recognize the taking in ourselves and get rid of that.
Good point, because it all starts with you.
Because we all want to
start actually with Terry.
So it does. Yeah.
We all just go along for the ride.
Well, that's a wise decision, Garland. Let me congratulate you on that. That's the first wise decision I've seen you make in a week.
I should stop taking Terry home. Am I confused here?
I don't know.
Hey,
what,
you should leave Terry.
No, that's an act of giving.
That's an act of giving. Okay. I thought it was taking.
You know,
that was giving.
No matter what he claims, he has never taken me home.
That's not true. I did just 3 weeks ago.
You took me to my home, but you didn't take me to your home.
Oh,
you know, I mean, come
on. Well, Terry, you're not welcome. No, apparently not. You and I aren't welcome.
No.
I have monitors to prevent that.
Right.
I shoot on sight. I mean, there's all kinds
snipers,
of snipers.
Kind of like the White House.
Yeah, I know.
The snipers have a picture of Terry. That's right.
They
constantly look at it. If you see this face,
I got the wounds. You want to see my scars?
That's what security is all about. But
backing up to Ron Moorfield's topic.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I don't want to try to get us.
We do have a topic, don't we?
One of the point he makes, and this is where I do agree with him again, and we were talking intellectually about what progressives have and don't have and all that and the strength they have and everything else, but his point, and I have this as number 7, progressives must stop working in the intellectual realm and start working in the emotional gut level arena. Garland.
I don't think they are mutually exclusive.
Exactly. Thank you.
As our president has said, a good policy is good politics. I think that what we have to do is, as an example, a lot of things that the president has done for, as an example, with student loans.
Right.
It's good policy and it's good politics. Now, what we haven't done is broadcast our successes. So I think that
the two go together, but we
need to ram it down people's throats over and over, like the Republicans do, even when they don't even have successes. They claim successes and say it anyway.
We do not need to copy the anti-intellectualism of the right.
We can be passionate, Ron, and at the same time,
be practical and be thoughtful. There's nothing mutually exclusive, to use Garland's words.
Yeah, we have to think ahead of
and
time
passion.
And then
Ron, go ahead and clarify your point.
Well, just that. We have to think ahead of time, be clear in our thinking, have the facts, and then act on it.
But now, the concluding part, I didn't want to jump this far ahead, but I'm going to because it's the context of the conclusion must guide our discussion. The concluding part of Ron's manifesto is simply, are we going to elect Mitt Romney or are we going to elect President Obama?
I thought the concluding part was go to some cabin in Montana. And
right.
Then
a lean-to, actually.
That's one alternative.
Fully automatic.
A wrong manifesto.
And canned foods. Lots of canned foods.
Yeah, wrong manifesto.
Marx, Das Kapital.
Mark, that's Terry's manifesto. Oh, that's the conclusion of his manifesto. You got them mixed up.
I'll take you to my home in the mountains.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sorry, pal. I ain't going to your home in the mountains. I got fear.
I'll end up in
canned foods.
I appreciate my own nobility in taking such abuse. I mean, I really do.
One of us here does. Glad one of us here does.
Anyway.
And we certainly enjoy abusing you, I might add.
We do. It's part of our pursuit of happiness.
We appreciate the opportunity.
I'm the glue that holds this entire show together. I don't know why I have to put up with this. But anyway, moving right along with the topic here.
Your self-proclaimed modesty is overwhelming.
Thank you. Ron is making the point that we're going to lose the election. And that may be a little stronger than he put it, but we're going to lose it because we're not talking about the issues here. We're not talking about so much the rightness or wrongness of even our ideals or ideas. We're talking about our marketing, because we have what? Less 105 days.
That's what it's all about.
That's what we got. We got 105
marketing
days.
Marketing matters.
And right now, even in a place like Oregon, where President Obama is right now, he is losing support. So how are we going to market this? That's the issue. We know the qualities and the standards and the ideas that we want to promote. How are we going to market this? That's the key thing.
I would argue that President Obama is going to market it all the way that David Axelrod and all the poll numbers show. He's going to do that. All the super PACs will go out. They'll do that. One thing I think we can do as talk radio hosts, and one thing I think our listeners can do, is simply to talk to one another. Is simply ask somebody the basic biblical question. Am I my brother's keeper? Do you believe a six-year-old with cancer who's poor should die or should they live? Basic human questions. Do you believe that everyone, crazy or not, should be able to buy a semi-automatic assault weapon with a 100 magazine clip? Do you believe that football is more important than molesting children? I mean, there's some basic values here that you don't have to be watching ads on TV to address at dinner table discussions. And if you answer that actually values matter, then you might just be a progressive.
Well, now that's good marketing, Mark. Yeah. That's good marketing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's good marketing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
good marketing.
Dinner table discussion.
That's the point.
And the thing of it is, if every single person would just talk to and convince two people
a
week.
Right here in the manifesto.
Two people a week. Okay.
And they told two friends.
And get those people to do two people a week.
And soon we all have the same shampoo. Right?
Right.
There we go.
That's right.
Well, you know, let me tell you my concern about
hang on 1 second, because I want to continue Ron's thought here. Okay, you talk to 10 people in the next week about the situation, get them to register to vote and commit to vote, and get them to do the same with 10 other people in the next week. If you have a listening audience, here's a lesson for us guys, of 1,000 people,
we got
in the first week, 10,000 people will be influenced if we ask of that 1,000 people to take the message to 10 other people. In the second week, 110,000 people. In the third, 1,210,000
people. You know, we all have friends. We all have friends and family that say, yeah, I might get around to vote. I don't know. I got a lot of work that Tuesday.
Or
and
I might vote for Obama, or I might not.
Or, right. Because, or, yeah. You know, I might vote for Obama, but I really like the Green candidate.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you got to pull them by the ears and say, do you hear what you're saying?
Right.
Do you remember George W. Bush? It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And start corralling our friends and family. And if someone needs a ride to the polls, give them a ride to the polls.
And I would argue that, from what I see, I really think that the only way we lose is if it's the playing field is not level. Right now, voter suppression is a very serious issue.
Huge.
We're looking at Pennsylvania where they can knock out 4 or 5%.
9%.
Yeah. Yeah.
9%.
So if they disenfranchise 9% of the people, let's just say somewhere around half of those people would have actually voted. 4 or 5%, 4.5%, you just won Pennsylvania.
There you go.
You know, the 20 electoral Florida, votes. The yeah. same with, you know, in some of these 2-3% is it. So the reality is this, the right wing could steal the election before it even starts. I think we have to really be concerned about voter suppression. I think we have to make noise about it. The Raucous Caucus has to, you know, scream and yell about it and jump up and down. And I think everyone has to. And I'm glad to see that Erica Holder's making a move on it, because that's serious. And that could be the difference. You know, we don't know what the super PAC money, how much it's going to affect it. We know it's going to affect something. But we know voter suppression, it's tangible. It's real. It's right there. It's real numbers. And I think we got to scream and yell about it and make a lot of noise.
Yeah, we got to make a lot of noise.
But we're going to do that anyway, but I just think everybody else.
Yeah, and also I think get out there and volunteer. Mm-hmm. I brought some voter registration forms with me.
Yes, he did. Anybody here from Virginia that hasn't got a voter registration?
You can register Terry. He hasn't voted since, I think, the 18th.
I have voted every election.
The election of Lincoln was the last time he voted.
I voted 13 times.
I have never missed a single election that was contested in my life.
Never missed a what?
I'm proud of that. I've never missed a single contested election. In my life.
I haven't missed an election, period.
Sometimes, I think once or twice when there was only one guy running, I didn't necessarily vote.
Okay, let me point out something, though, because, again, it gets back to one of Ron's points. And we talked about voter suppression here. We talked about a lot of things. And he points out, well, let me just use this metaphor to begin with. You know, you talk to any military person, you know, in a war situation, you can't simply fight every single battle. You cannot possibly win if you fight every single battle. You are too spread too thin. You won't be able to organize your resources, et cetera, et cetera. You won't be able to back up when you need to back up. You can't attack every single issue. And this is one of the problems with the progressives, quoting again from Ron. It makes no sense to try to solve global warming in the next election. That is a strong point. Ron, explain what you mean by that.
Well, just that. We have to focus on what the objective is, and it is getting Obama elected and getting Democrats elected into both the Senate and the House. Mm-hmm. And then we can convince them to take the actions that we want them to take as progressives. But if the Republicans win, we don't stand a chance.
And then if they don't, we can have intra-progressive races. We can have Democratic primaries,
right. Yes.
where we get rid of the Joe Liebermans of the world. But but I agree with you. At the end of the day, the people that say, well, you know, the Democrats are the same as the Republicans. Terry Custer, somebody says this. People who say things like that. Oh, excuse me. I had something in my throat. People who claim
you're going to get more than that in your. Never mind.
Claim that, I think, sometimes push people not to vote or to vote for a third party that has no chance of winning, and therefore hurt the people who can be persuaded, and instead we get people who cannot.
It's a question of timing. It's a question of timing, as far as I'm concerned, and to justify and explain myself, although I don't need any justification. The point is, prior to the election, I'm going to raise living hell about what Obama has not done. But now we're 105 days out. I don't give a damn what he didn't accomplish. I give a damn about what he might accomplish. And
I'm
people
glad
have
to hear
got
that.
To
yeah.
support him saying now. Now is the turning point.
I'm glad to hear that. And we can fight about it after he's reelected.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
exactly.
It's the difference. You know, this business about there's no difference. I mean, we're looking at a significant difference. So let's say you've got a moldy brownie. And you say, I don't want that moldy brownie.
I'll have cyanide.
Right. But your option is a brownie made of broken glass. Eat the moldy brownie.
Yeah, please.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what we're up against here. We've got two things, and one of them you might say, and this is the other way I put it to those out there who will say, well, there's no difference. Here's the difference. The difference is, the difference between getting some of the things you want and some of the things you don't want, that's President Obama, and getting everything you don't want,
that's right.
And that's Mitt Romney. I mean, if we go to select a car, we'll find everything about the car is the same, but we might find one thing. Well, that has bucket seats, so I'm going to make – it may be 99.9% alike, but the only small difference is one has bucket seats, and we make a choice based on that one small difference. So how can you look at two – politicians where there are massive differences in a lot of different areas and say they're exactly alike. I don't understand that. It's an emotional response. There is no credible, rational argument to say that President Obama and Mitt Romney are the same.
So, let me ask Ron then, since it's your manifesto, what do you think is – you said we should concentrate on a few issues. We can't solve global warming in the next 105 days. I agree with you, even though that's one of the issues I really care about. What do you think should be the focus in the next 105 days for President Obama and for progressives?
I think the focus is actually to elect President Obama.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, elect as many Democratic senators – and House members as possible.
And when your friends who can vote, and there are not many of them, but we all have a few friends that sometimes vote Democratic, some vote Republican. Frankly, they're the ones who decide all the elections, folks, because the 90% of us that always vote one way or the other aren't the people deciding elections unless we choose not to vote. When that talented 10, sorry, WB Du Bois, when that talented 10%, your friends that can vote either way, say, why should we vote for the Democrats? Why should we vote for Obama? What would you tell them, Ron?
First thing I would do is feel their pain. You know, be compassionate and empathetic and not confront.
Because they're going to say, hey, this economy is not what it used to be.
Yeah. And then you just have to say, you know, you have to convince them that they cannot vote against their own self-interest.
Well, I'd like to ask Mark and Terry each one of those. We've got a lot of listeners. Each of those the same question. We've got a lot of listeners that listen to this show, that know us, that listen to the heck we raise every week. And I'd like to ask each of you, Terry, why should we vote for President Obama?
I'm going to quote Ron here out of respect for his manifesto. Simply because if I don't vote for Obama and the Republicans win, the right wing is going to take away my Social Security. They're going to go after
it. That's true.
And I hate to admit
it.
But right now I am living on Social Security. Thank you very much. And I could use a sandwich. Secondly, the right wing is going to go after my Medicare, and yes, I use Medicare today, and they are going to go after it. If Obama doesn't win, the right wing is going to go after my friends who are unemployed and leave them unemployed and leave them without benefits. The right wing is also going to go after my friend's right to plan their families and women's right to plan what they do with their own body. And finally, and the thing that ticks me off the most, because I've been dealing with trying to get some financial solutions, the right wing will, if Obama is not elected, the right wing will empower Wall Street to take every dollar they can from you and me.
Mark, that's why should we vote for President Obama?
Well, that was very, very powerful, Terry, and I'd give you a lot of credit if you weren't just reading Ron's words. So, Ron, that was
very
powerful,
Ron. Let's remind Ron that I am the only person here.
He's doing a few of his own.
Come on. So, Ron, those are some beautiful words. Terry, beautiful elocution. That was really nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
But thank you, Ron.
Okay, Mark, why?
It's hard to beat that. But
it is. It is. Go ahead, try.
I would say that
time's up.
The heart, the heart of the question is, and I got my constitution here as I always do by my side. The heart of the question is, do you believe in we the people? If you hate government, then you hate we the people. If you say the government is always wrong, then you believe that democracy is always wrong. At the end of the day, do you want we the people to make decisions that affect the people's lives, or do you want massive, faceless, multinational corporations who you can't vote for, who you have no control over, who you can't lobby, choosing your lives? If you believe that democracy, though imperfect, as Winston Churchill once says, it's the worst possible system except for all the others, if you believe that democracy is the last best hope of mankind, if you believe, as Abraham Lincoln said, that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall never perish from the earth, then you've got to support the Democratic Party, because the Republican Party is not looking out for we the people. Whether it's taking away people's rights to vote, whether it's empowering Wall Street to do things as much as they want, whether it's empowering the polluters, whatever it is, the Republican Party, and Mitt Romney in particular, is the epitome of this. Is a guy by the rich, for the rich, and of the rich. And I'm not knocking rich people. There's plenty of nice rich people out there. Warren Buffett,
six.
I think.
There are six.
I think it's a good rich man. But do you believe that the rules should be different for the rich and the poor? Should the rich get justice and the poor not get justice? The middle class not get justice? Should the rich have an opportunity to an education and the poor not? Should the rich have access to the best doctors in the world and the middle class not? Do you believe that we are a society of all the people, or do you believe we have a society where we should all serve our betters? And if you do believe that, you probably would prefer the monarchy under King George.
Okay, let me throw this important one out.
That in.
This
throw
is
that
an important in. One. Out. And don't leave that. I don't care what you think about President Obama. I don't care what you think about Mitt Romney. The next president will probably choose one or two members of the Supreme Court. Trust me, that's where the real power is that changes this country for a long time.
One
and
vote
they will be
United.
There for life.
That's right.
So if you think Citizens United was bad, that's nothing. That the Supreme Court overrules the president.
Only the beginning.
They overrule the Congress. So if nothing else, if they were identical, the fact of the matter is, this is going to be critical. At the end of this presidency, we will likely have a Supreme Court that will take our country in one direction or the other. The decision is going to be what direction we go in. If you want to go to the right. And right off, straight off a cliff?
And I'm going to take it one step further because it's in Ron's work again. And again, Ron Moorfield is our guest.
It's in Ron. Where's in Ron? I thought they were out of business.
In Ron, yes. No, in Ron. Ron Moorfield is our guest host
tonight. Romney wants to bring them back.
And we want to thank you very much. The one question that we want to deal with, because we haven't dealt with this, is you point out, and I agree with you, and I think Garland actually does too, but we'll find out here in a moment.
Yeah, but I'll
deny it. We've talked about it before, that the progressives have to have the courage to address the idea of good and evil. Ron?
Yes, absolutely. It's this is not about liberal, conservative. It's not about right, left. We're literally at a point where we're talking about good and evil.
How about right and wrong?
You know, and right and wrong. And I mean, we all went to Sunday school, or a lot of us did. We were all raised knowing what's right, knowing what's wrong. We've got models from literature. We've got models from religion all over the world. And we know in our heart what is right and what is wrong. And it's time to start thinking in those terms and not, oh, this is some kind of intellectual debate between the conservatives and the liberals. No.
But it's
evil to throw people out of their homes. It is evil to make it so that people cannot live. It is evil to not give them medicine. And that's what we've got to fix.
But see, Ronald, I think we have to go further than that because I raised.
How can you go further than that?
I'll tell you how you go further than that. When I raise precisely the things that Ron says with right-wingers, and I bring them on my show and I argue with them, they come up with facts that are wrong, but that sustain them in their belief that they're not doing evil. One of the main facts that right-wingers sustain themselves with are, we have no poverty in the United States because the churches take care of it. We have no sickness because hospitals take anyone who's in need. We have no hunger because everyone who is hungry or needs a home simply goes to their church basement to eat. They actually think that religious institutions cover all the bases. And when you tell them that they don't, they just don't believe you.
Yeah, because
and
they
so maybe what you have to do is take them out in the streets and say, here, there's a hungry person.
But no, what you have to do is recognize that, people like that aren't going to change their mind.
No, they're not.
You have to recognize who's lost. You have to recognize that there are people in this country who culturally see things very different than we do. There are people in this country who see a striated class system for rights. If you're at the top of this system, you should have certain rights. If you're a little bit further down, you have less rights. The further down you go down this class system, the less rights that you should have, as opposed to people like us who say everybody should have the same rights. You recognize that when you make those arguments with the people, they go glassy-eyed and they can't hear you, and you have to be able to recognize who you have the opportunity to change, who you have the
That's
opportunity.
That's really a good point.
You know
That's
what I mean?
Really a
and
good
so
point.
You don't waste all your breath and all
exactly.
your energy going after people who are never going to vote on your side, but you find people who you have an opportunity to, and you get to them, and you get their minds.
Which means, two very simple things. One, we've got to do everything we can to nourish and support those who we think are going to vote for Obama, basically Democrats or whatever, liberals and progressives.
Or independents. Don't forget the independents.
That's the second thing. That's two different marketing campaigns. One is to sustain and nourish that group that will vote for Obama. And the other is that 10%, if it's that much, and I'm not sure it's that much, but that 10% that can go one way or the other, those are the ones that we have to take Ron's arguments and the arguments we've all brought up tonight. Those are the people we really have to work on. And that is actually, if you think about it, that is the hardest group
Hit
to
them in the heart.
Yeah, you've got to. Because what you're really talking about here, and I'm very glad that Ron brought it up one way or the other, is a spiritual problem, is a value problem. You can put different words on it, you can use different nouns, but the point is, we are in, the quote, well, Jimmy Carter didn't actually say it. It was pinned on him. We are in a moral malaise. There's no question about it. If Penn State doesn't show you that, then what the hell will? If Aurora doesn't show you that, then what the hell will? Somehow or other, we've got to get people aware that it is a question of good and evil. Yes, we can argue to some degree about what good is and evil are, but if I'm giving you an advantage and depriving if I'm giving Mark an advantage and depriving Garland to give Mark that advantage, I've created an unjust world.
And we're talking about people who believe in what we would say is an unjust world. These are people.
Okay.
Oh, we're running out of time.
We're running out of time.
Speaking
here.
Of an unjust world, in a just world, we have a lot more time.
No question about it. This is the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. We're down here tonight at Ben's Next Door, and we'll be here
in Washington, D.C.
We'll be here next Tuesday as well.
Can
right?
we That's give our guest, Ron, just 15 seconds? Do you have a final word you want to add?
15 seconds? Yeah, Ron, what should we do?
15 seconds. Everybody go out, get active, make sure you vote. Okay, and talk to people, convince them, empathize with them, convince them. Because remember, the majority is in fact agreeing with you.
We are still.
And thank you, Ron Moorfield, very much
thank
for joining
you.
Us tonight on the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
We
your
are
work.
At Ben's again next week,
next Tuesday,
the last Tuesday
next
in
week,
July.
We're going to have
come join us.
We're going to have a historian, and we're going to talk about, believe it or not, how slavery affects
is
the
coming
country.
Back.
Well, it's already back.
Oh, okay.
But it's called corporate America.
Yes.
But how it affects us today in real terms? How it actually affects.
Okay,
us.
Come
join
wrap,
us
we
next
wrap
week.
It up. This is 89.3 FM Pacifica. Stay tuned for Brother with the Jazz Collection. Stay tuned tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, What's at Stake with yours truly, Terry D. Kester, with Mark Levine here and Garland Nixon on the Raucous Caucus.
All
and
right.
Thank you.
at 89.3 FM. This is member-supported WPFW Washington.